Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Hello and welcome back to Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter and I'm joined by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza, and we're your primary selection team here at Cattle. It is summer. It feels like it more than we want it to. Summer reading has started, and that's kind of where we're starting.
That's a great thing. I love summer reading. It started yesterday, June 1st, and it goes all the way until August 5th. This is a wonderful challenge for everyone to read in these 9 to 10 weeks or so. I might be
I'm logging.
Yay. And we know everyone does read, but we want you to join in community and log with us. We are asking, especially children, to read at least 20 minutes a day. This is a challenge that we really want to begin practicing for kids and teens. Parents to spend that amount of time with their younger children, practicing all those early literacy skills and just doing fun things together. So as usual, our summer reading challenge, there's basically a goal for each group. And as I said in previous years, it's for everyone, babies and toddlers, kids, teens, adults. There are prizes for everyone. Along the way, when you complete certain milestones, you can come into your branch and pick up prizes like a cattle cow. What does that mean, you say? Well, if you're a kid, you'll have to do it. this is something that's really, really important to not just our community, but just our world in general, just to be reading for pleasure, reading to learn, and then later on learning more. Because we have those reading skills, we can continue to build. And that's especially important for kids, younger kids, because they're really trying to establish those skills. So,
and adults modeling kids.
Yeah. And adults, we model so much for children. When we don't read, when we spend more time on our phone than reading, I'm guilty of that. So I hope that everyone has fun reading that. There are lots of activities that you can do as well. For example, teens, come on in, take a selfie in the library. Listen to something on Hoopla if you haven't checked us out before. We have lots of activities that help us to complete the reading challenge in addition to our reading. So I hope that you will all participate.
Excellent.
Very cool. You want to start us off with some books, too?
Yeah. So I do have a couple of books that I want to recommend. They kind of go with the theme of summer and then all together. Now, the first one I have is When Summer Comes, Exploring Nature in Our Warmest Season. This is by Amy M. Bissonette, and it's illustrated by Aaron Horrigan. And it's a picture book. It's a beautiful picture book of a family exploring the outdoors together. I have to say that anytime a book is featuring particularly Black Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans out in the outdoors, it just really appeals to me because my family did all that too, but we didn't always see books like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm just really excited that this story involves camping, involves walking in the woods. It's a beautiful story that is about relaxation and spending time together, which kind of fits in with our theme. The other book I want to recommend is Folk Tales for a Better World, Stories of Peace and Kindness. This is by Elizabeth Laird, and it is illustrated, I apologize for mispronouncing your name if I do, Mehedoka Amini. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. And these are 7 folk tales, particularly kind of from the Middle East, I would say, Ethiopia, Sudan, Palestine, Yemen. And there's also a story, actually, a Uyghur story from China in there. But these are stories that have been passed down, and the stories were passed to Elizabeth Laird, and she kind of rewrote them because they are folk tales that get repeated a lot about, issues related to families and neighbors, you know, having arguments and getting into fights, and how we can do better by each other in our community by coming together to share our feelings, yes, but kindness and making the decision to, you know, agree to disagree even. There's lots of stories. There's one from Palestine that I thought was really interesting because there's a judge and a sultan who are arguing and trying to be kind, but trying to determine truth, I guess. I really, really enjoyed this book. It's on our list for the summer reading list for children, and I hope you'll consider reading it.
Sounds really good. They both do. I'd like to move into a kid's book as well. I don't select children's material, but my past is a children's librarian, and who doesn't love children's books, especially picture books? This is one that I picked up because I enjoy Robert McCloskey, the author of and illustrator of Make Way for Ducklings, Blueberries for Sale, you know, 1940s era award-winning books. But this one is called Mr. McCloskey's Marvelous Mallards, The Making of Make Way for Ducklings by Emma Bland Smith and illustrated by Becca Tandler. And this is actually an illustrated story about how Robert McCloskey drew and was able to make such realistic and captivating mallard ducks in Make Way for Ducklings. And he, when studying in Boston, he would go through the public park and see the ducks, and he would feed them, he'd watch families interacting with them, and that just planted that seed, something about the ducklings in that park. And then later on, when he moved to New York, the story kind of started to form in his mind. He wanted to make it. So he went to the museum to look at ducklings. He looked at pictures of ducks. He just could not get the ducks quite right. So truly, he actually purchased some chicks and brought them to a Greenwich Village apartment, much to the annoyance of his roommate. And the chicks lived in the apartment, and he tried studying them that way. Then he wasn't quite right for the adults, so he had some adults. Ducks dropped off, no joke, and he started studying them, and that's how he made such realistic and captivating mallards that we see in this classic tale, which won the Caldecott Medal. And so this is just a marvelous book, takes you back, and I think that's sort of the appeal of Robert McCloskey's work. It's really rooted in real life. His books about life in Maine were rooted in taking his family to Maine. Sal is one of his children, so it brings that. Brings up how many of these books just come from these really just kind of mundane experiences that become a kernel that turn into, you know, really a work of art that's loved by generations. So just a really fantastic picture book that I really enjoyed.
Okay, then I have a picture book. No, I have a different kind of picture book, actually. I absolutely love the artist Brian Selznick. I didn't quite discover him when he did the artwork for When Marian Sang, but I love that book and it caught my eye. I just didn't associate it with him yet, as he was the illustrator for it. And then I found and fell in love with The Boy of a Thousand Faces, which is a book he wrote and illustrated. He then won like the Newbery for The Invention of Hugo Cabret, which brought him to lots of people's attention. This latest book is Big Tree. It's a chapter book, but it's heavily illustrated. I mean, it's his very stylized charcoal or pencil drawings, that shading. It's just such a detailed style that I really have always just really loved it. And this book kind of appealed to me in the sense of. We've sort of mentioned that one of the themes is the overall theme for the summer reading program is All Together Now. And this one kind of looks at that on almost a global scale. However, this is a book told from the point of view of two seeds who are comfortably within Mama Tree, waiting for their, you know, waiting to move on when a fire comes through their tree stand. And Mama's basically telling them, I'm hoping that I prepared you. I really hoped I'd have more time, but it's, remember what I told you, and then they're launched into the world. And kind of the running theme is Mama gave us roots and wings. So, and they're basically sent off into the world to find their place to grow and root. But they also, in their process of trying to find a space, they meet different parts of the community of nature. They end up in water and dealing with some water creatures and plants, and they end up in other areas. They run into a butterfly. They end up in a footprint, so you get the idea that, oh, this is pre-people. this is more like dinosaur age. But it's really, really ultimately, it's about finding your roots. It's about listening to the world around us, which we really need to work on. And ultimately, there's a kind of an underlying voice talking to one of the seedlings, and she hears it better than her brother, but her brother eventually hears it too. And it's just trying to get everybody to band together for the greater good, and for the sake of them. And it's just a really interesting way of trying to get people to think about how we band together, how we listen to the world, how we treat the earth. But it's just beautifully well done. And weirdly, this is an artist who's had movies made of his work, but he also has some. I mean, he's related to Selznick in Golden Age movies, but he. This is a story that the seed of the story was actually created by Steven Spielberg and Chris Meledandri, who is founder of the animation company Illumination. And he took their story idea and created this book. So it's just an interesting story that I think people should get a hold of, take a look at. It's just beautifully done.
Cool. Sounds like one of those good books for all ages.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep, definitely. Very much.
Probably not the tiniest child.
And really
child,
most of his are, yeah, I definitely think.
I didn't know he did When Marion Sang, too.
Yes.
Oh,
he did
my
the
goodness.
Art for When Marion
wow.
Sang.
Wow. Okay. Wow. That's so cool.
Well, the next title I have is A Warrior Girl Unearthed. It's by Angeline Boley. And you may remember that she had this really awesome book come out in 2021 called Firekeeper's Daughter. And this is no less engrossing and just sucking you in. I will say that it's actually not really a sequel in that you can read it as a standalone. You don't have to have read the first one. It's really, really good in that you've got a lot of snark with teenagers, and you have a lot of description of themes in Native American culture that I know I haven't thought about. So the setting is in 2014. It's roughly 10 years after Donis's timeline back in the other book. And we are back at Sugar Island in the UP of Michigan. And there are two teens who are twins. And these were actually the little nieces of Donis. And I remember them from the book. But now they're all grown up as 16-year-olds. So there's Perry and there's also Pauline. And the story is told from the perspective of Perry. Pauline is the more academic one, really driven. She's got her whole life set out. She's like visited all the colleges, blah, blah, blah. Perry, not so much. She kind of just would rather just chill, relax, go fishing. She's very good at fishing. She really loves her community and doesn't really have plans to leave. And she ends up kind of wrecking the car. And this was a gift from Aunt Donis. Aunt Donis is like, you're going to have to pay me back for the repairs. And she wasn't planning to do the same internship that her sister is doing with the tribal like museum or center. But she ends up having to do that because it does pay really well. And she's kind of dragging her feet. And she gets paired up with, I think his name is Turtle Cooper. He is one of the leaders in the tribal community, and he is working to get the remains of Native Americans back from colleges.
Yes.
That's just one of the themes. It's officially called the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act of 1990, mm-hmm. or NAGPRA. And this is, I didn't know really, it provides a process for agencies, federal agencies and museums that get federal funds, to actually give them back, repatriate them, and let the communities from which these peoples were from have a burial for them, or get them back and own them again. So early on, she comes into contact with a college, and there's this very intense scene where she meets Warrior Girl, or the remains of Warrior Girl. And Perry is not... Like I said, she wasn't really into this, but all of a sudden she is. And there's just so many themes. It is a thriller, so it reads very, very quickly. But there are just so many different themes that come that I just hadn't always like connected. You know, the fact that her father is a black man, but also identifies as Anishinaabe, and just the colorism issues that go on. Or discussions, I should say, not issues, but just, you know, that there's something that's being discussed. Indigenous women that go missing. It's a really, really quick, fun read. I think both adults and teenagers would really, really like it. And like I said, it's not really a sequel, so you could pick it up without having read the other one. I really, really liked it.
Wow.
Yep.
I have still not read the first one, and I'm feeling way behind here. Now after reading this one, they both sound amazing. I haven't met anybody who didn't love that first book.
Exactly.
And wasn't talking
yes,
about it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Raving about it. So, okay. So I have going in a totally different direction. Just thinking about summer and the abundance of fruit that will start coming out. Starting now, really, my rhubarb crop is humongous. It's engulfing the garden. So it's time to do something about it, where I'm going to use this book for. This book is called Pulp, A Practical Guide to Cooking with Fruit. 215 plus sweet and savory recipes and variations, including a baker's toolkit by Abra Behrens. And Abra, I've talked about at least one of her books on the podcast so far. I don't think I talked about the first one. Her first book was Roughage, which is a Michigan notable book. I talked about Grist, which was the book about grains and rice last summer or the summer before. And Abra Behrens is a Michigan author and chef. She is now a chef at Granner Farm in Three Oaks, Michigan. This is like a full farm to tape with a table restaurant that's related. She got her start at Zingerman's in Ann Arbor and then went to Chicago, so she's got total Michigan roots. And her books are really just, they're humongous, they're gorgeous,
yeah.
And they're just this wealth of information. And they can trend from, what I love about them is, you know, a lot of cookbooks are very, very basic or very gourmet, and there's not a lot in the middle. Her work runs from the extremely basic, if you just want to stick with making some really simple rhubarb jam or a really simple cake, to using fruit with fish and meat and getting into more gourmet recipes. And she does that with all of her books. Another great thing about her books is that they profile Michigan farmers, artisans, small business owners working in the Michigan food movement from all across the state. And so it's got that little piece of information that's excellent. In the beginning of this book, she gives you some really basic recipes for like focaccia, different types of batters for cakes and doughs. That way you could just, and cookies, like very basic cookies. Then you could take any of the fruits and integrate them how you want into each of these recipes. But then the rest of the book is profiles on each fruit, different ways of preparing the fruit. There's a jam recipe for each one. And again, just a wealth of information. It's like an encyclopedia of fruit recipes essentially here. So Pulp by Abra Behrens.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yes, wow. It does, and I have that at home, and I'm still working my way through it. It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous.
Is a gorgeous book.
It's a tome.
It is a gorgeous big book, yes. I think I'm finishing it up here with, you know, summer reading, beach reading. For me, that's fast, fun, fantasy. So I grabbed Martha Wells' new fantasy novel, The Witch King. I have gushed about Martha Wells in the past, of course, because Martha Wells writes the Murderbot series, and this is, and so those are all science fiction with charm and wit and snark. This is fantasy with fast-paced action, charm and wit and snark. So I loved it. It is not a one-to-one if you are a Murderbot fan, but I think if you like her writing in general, you should give this one a try regardless. She drops you right in the middle of it. So you are like the main character trying to figure out what's going on page one, because he's waking up having been killed. He's in a tomb. He doesn't know how he got there. He doesn't know how he died, but he does know that the body that he is somewhat attached to is dead. He's still kind of with it. He's not entirely human. Okay, you get that fairly quickly because he's still thinking and trying to figure out what's going on. His tomb is being invaded by people who seem to want something from him. He's annoyed with them. He's annoyed with his situation. He can latch onto bodies, and he finds one that he can use, and then turns around and kind of attacks them back, and gets himself out of the situation, in the immediate situation, but has to figure out what's going on. It's political intrigue. His best friend is in the building somewhere in the tower with him, so he needs to find her. They need to figure out what's happened to her wife, because that's like sort of the third part of their group. And they should be able to reach, she should be able to reach out to her wife and connect. She can't do it. She can't figure out what's going on. So they need to figure out what's going on in the world, how he got killed. She's not dead. She's just bricked up someplace. And it's just it's actually a really interesting political thriller that sort of unwinds their history as part of them trying to figure out what's going on going forward. And it's really well done. It's complexly put together, but really unspools very nicely, and it's a fun read.
All right.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. All right, thank you guys.
Yeah,
thank
that was
you.
Good.
Happy reading, everyone.
Happy reading and happy summer.
Absolutely.